This podcast was first broadcast on Fresh FM, the top of the South community access radio station. For more information on Fresh FM, as well as links to other great local podcasts, go on our website freshfm.net or download the accessmedia.nz app.
Hello and welcome. I'm Galen Pound and you're listening to Top Writers. My guest today is photographer and author Ian Trafford. Ian's latest book is Into the Unknown, The Secret World War I Diary of Kiwi Alec Trafford, number 25-469. It was published in August by Penguin Random House New Zealand, and Ian is Alec's grandson. Welcome to Fresh, Ian.
Kia ora, hello.
Into the Unknown, The Secret World War I Diary is a diary that shouldn't exist, but it does. Can you please tell us a little about Alec and his diary?
Alec, my grandfather, was a very typical World War I vet. A lot of people actually wrote diaries or wrote things in the war. They weren't allowed to. They were smuggled out to England mostly and then just packed in their sea chests, hiding in their clothes. They brought them home. But like so many of our ancestors, they didn't talk about that war. They were silent. And there was a lot of stuff to talk about. There was a real echo chamber in their heads. He stashed the diaries from his family. No one even knew of their existence until in the late 1960s. He was going into his retirement, and he asked my father, his son, to go into the ceiling cavity, through the manhole, find a package and destroy it. And my father had no idea what that package was, and they contained, among other things, about 15 volumes of diary from World War I.
Now, Alec volunteered to go to World War I.
Most of the New Zealand men volunteered to go to World War I. It was. It seems like they were all putting their hands up and keen for an adventure. When you read these diaries, that wasn't really Alec's idea. It wasn't about adventure. His younger brother was already at the war, and there was such a huge propaganda campaign in New Zealand that every eligible man felt compelled to sign up.
And it quickly turned sour for him, didn't it?
World War One turned sour for almost everybody that was in it. He quickly observed the realities of what he had signed up for.
Well, how did these diaries fall into your hands?
My father brought them home under the orders to destroy them, but he sneaked a peek and he was so hooked and interested in his father's hidden story to know why his father acted in certain ways. He sneaked a look and he didn't burn them, and he slowly shared pieces with us, and then he was so interested he got them typed into a manuscript, and then he distributed them to some of the family, including me. And I was really lucky. Here was now a readable manuscript typed out.
What were your first impressions on reading them?
First impressions were that Granddad was a bit of a heretic. I'd read war comics as a kid, like every Kiwi kid did in those days. But the diary showed a really personal side to the war, the suffering, and actually what happened, not what we are told what happened, but actually what was happening.
Did it help you understand your granddad?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, and I think this is a real nerve that's been struck with the book. There were around about 10% of the New Zealand population shipped off to Gallipoli and then Europe. Europe was the main theatre. We keep thinking it's Gallipoli. It was Europe. And, 3 degrees of separation in New Zealand, it's the same story that all of our families have somewhere in the cupboard, you know.
What made you decide to put the diaries into book form and now into the public arena now?
My father had always kind of looked at me with this idea, if I give you the diaries, Ian, you can write from them sometime. I went to teachers' college and university. The only one in my family at that stage, so he wanted me to write it. And then I always said to myself, well, when I get old, I better write this book. And
he's not that
okay,
old.
Okay, I better do it soon.
Right, before we go on, could you please read us something from the diaries?
This is the thing. It's It's a diary, but I've written it more like a novel. First of all, I'll read you a part from his worst part of the war, which is Passchendaele, and that's a chapter I've named Passchendaele, Damned Passchendaele. Okay. 16th of October, 1917. The rain starts again. We get the bad news our platoon is going to the front line. With 15 platoon in support, 100 yards to our rear, we have drawn the short straw. We find our new front line shell hole homes. They are shallow, 2 foot deep, with scraped out sleeping holes. We're in a nervy position. In front of us, looming as the great giant is Passchendaele, a hill that has cost us many lives. Hundreds of unburied corpses are spread about, floating in flooded craters trapped in mud or blown into unrecognisable pieces. The bones of dead men show clearly, picked over by rats and washed white by the rain. This time it appears we have not had the time to bury our own. Not a sign of nature remains. Every tree lies uprooted by shellfire. During the night, old Fritz opens up in reality, walloping in his 5.9s and whiz-bangs. His range is right on us, and I cannot imagine anyone will be left alive by the morning. It is solid on the nerves. My ears have gone. I have never been subjected to such direct shellfire. I have the wind up. I'm still alive in the morning. I do not know how. I had some of the closest shaves of my life. We cannot move in the daylight. Every slight movement and over they come again. The enemy aeroplanes of absolute dominance. Showers of rain keep us cold, wet through and plastered with mud. My feet are wet and sore. We are running short of rations. We cannot safely stand for more than a few seconds. The day passes slowly with the thought of another night in our minds. In such an exposed position, we take heavy losses. Dead and wounded men mount up beside us. I am much in need of our 2 rum rations. It warms a man up. In the night, it rains and blows while old Fritz shells us heavily. At some stage, a 5.9 comes in right on target, without warning. Our earth home explodes around us. I'm suddenly suffocating under the heavy pressure of mud, completely buried by the blast. I think my time has come. In a last struggle to push out of this tomb, my thrashing around gets my head out and I scrape the mud off my face for a breath of air. I have come off best of all. I set to with my spade. We drag 2 shock men out alive. The third man, poor Evans, is limp, killed by the percussion. I bury him alongside. Early the next evening, we hear the joyful noise of men ploughing through the mud. The 17th Ruahinis have arrived to relieve us. Only 12 men of my platoon are left.
Right. The book's certainly chilling reading, and there's everything from sick horses being tossed off boats into the ocean to men bruising their private parts and injecting themselves with condensed milk to avoid going to France. Was there a temptation to sanitise some of this information?
That was I agonised over that lots. The thing that makes these diaries really special is that he talks about the things that you are not supposed to talk about. He talks about the woman in the war. He talks about venereal diseases.
Yeah, which the women were blamed for. I mean, there's no blame on the men for getting the pox, is there? It's always the woman's fault.
Well, that's also the good thing about Alec. He actually is always praising women, so he doesn't blame them for anything. And he doesn't get venereal disease, but he talks about the men that do.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really personal story. So it took a lot of agonizing. And in the end, you know, I had to write the full story. I couldn't sanitize it. It was Alec's story, and I had to write the full story. His 91-year-old daughter is still alive in Golden Bay, Minty Henderson, and I went to see her to get the mandate to actually write this book, and she said, go ahead, I don't have to read all of the chapters.
Right. Now, this book, for anybody that's read it, has struck nerves.
Yes.
What are some of the stories that you have heard from people that have read this book?
Yeah, there are stories slowly filtering back. There's a man in Gisborne who's over 100 years old. His uncle appears in the book, and his uncle's is one of the stories that's a really sad piece of the book. A good friend of Alec's who is wounded near Egypt for a start is evacuated to England. Then the doctors implore him to go home because his injuries are so bad. He then moves to the Western Front because he wants to. Gets badly injured, comes back to England, and slowly lingers and dies from infection and complications over around 4 months. And a daughter is reading this book to to the nephew of this guy, and he's starting to open up about experiences, and, you know, it's made him cry, but it's kind of, it's almost like the lifting of a curse. It's people hear Alec's story and how honest Alec has been about everything, and they, you know, people start to talk now.
Because the men didn't talk, the families don't talk.
No.
And now, like our generation, we're actually having to make them talk.
Yes.
Because otherwise this is all going to be lost.
Yes, I think one of the reasons also why Alec wanted to hide the diaries is he's very personal about his personal life. So the book's all not doom and gloom. He snatches joy in England and Belgium, and he makes the best use of his time. There's a chapter called The English Girls, and that's the chapter I really agonized about. So at one stage he's in camp, and the locals start to run dances, and then the army start to run dances, and he goes out and says he buys a new pair of dancing strides, and he's at every single dance.
Yeah, because he liked the ladies, didn't he?
Yeah, well, maybe they liked him.
Maybe they liked him, family, great, yeah. Right, now there is a quote in your book from The War Is Never Over by Cecil Harrison that's very pertinent.
Mm.
War is never over, though we win the victory. Still in our minds are battles. No, freedom is not free. For Alec, he survived the war, his brother didn't, but he still faced so many battles. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, this is where the book's a little different, because it goes through the end. The end of the book is about his return to New Zealand and the obstacles he has to overcome. And the obstacles are, of course, he's suffering from shell shock. And he has a super hard time farming a very marginal block in the Waiweka Gorge between Gisborne and Opotiki. And it's marginal land. The land fails. There's not enough fertility in the land. And he eventually has to sell all of his sheep and try to make a living by starting a butchery business. He has a super hard time financially. He's always writing letters to the government asking for help. And then when World War II comes around, he has children by then, and the shell shock really hits home. And during World War II, he actually gets really upset and depressed. And during his worst nights, he marched off to the hay barn to sleep like a soldier once again. And this is quite a few years after he was a soldier. So these feelings kept rising to the surface.
And then your own father, Harvey, was conscripted into World War II.
Yes, that was his big fear, that his own children would have to go and go to war. And Harvey, my father, I only just found this out while I wrote the book. I checked up the conscriptions, and there he was, Harvey Trafford, farm labourer, number such and such, called up for World War II. Luckily for my father and Alec, the war was over before he had to go.
Now, Alec is saying about Alec and the useless land. With all the men returning, they were all given land, like this big gesture from the government, and it was all useless.
Yeah, a lot of it was in marginal areas because, you know, the fertile, easy plains and foothills were taken. The Waiweka Gorge, for example, where Alec went, there were no roads there. They had to ride horses there. They had to take the trees off the land. Tiger country, and super difficult. I think out of the 40-odd settlers in that valley, two landowners kept their land, and the Traffords were one of them.
So the battle was never over for them?
The battle was never over, no. And, you know, he still has joy in his post-war periods, but it's definitely pocked by the resurfacing of emotions. And this is a real theme with all of our veterans, you know, especially these World War One veterans, because we really didn't know anything about it. And I thought I did until I really went into these diaries. And it's a real revelation as to the psyche of New Zealand and the psyche of old soldiers.
And that's what makes this book so important.
Yeah.
And it's actually a shame in a way it's taken so long. But then again, if we'd told it straight after the war, it probably would have been hushed up and lost.
Yeah, well, I sat on the diaries for 40 years. And yes, you're right. I guess it's never too late. There's still plenty of people in New Zealand that have this, you know, feeling at Anzac Day. And if you have that feeling, this is the book to read.
I think everybody should read it personally.
Well, thank you. I do too, but I can't say that.
I don't know, but yeah. Right, the social after effects of World War One are in many ways a paradox. You basically have a whole generation screwed up.
Yes.
You've got these men returning from the front that have got post-traumatic stress that's never diagnosed. There's no help for it. And then you've got the role of women in society. Women are suddenly going from being the little woman to having to run farms, raise families, you know, put food on the table. And then on the other hand, you've got films coming out, literature coming out, comics glorifying war.
That's right.
Could you make some comments about your feelings on all that?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there about the heroes, our war heroes. There's not a lot of stuff about the ordinary man like Alec. And I think if you follow the ordinary man's story, you get the story very, very clearly. As far as the woman went, he came home and married Ivy Newman.
Amazing.
Which is a spoiler for the book.
No.
And she is a very strong woman. You know, you get the theme, he's always interested in strong women, women that have sympathy. And, he marries a very strong woman. So the last part of there's one whole chapter devoted to Ivy. And, yeah, he really respects her strength.
Now, we do need to have a chat about your Auntie Minty. If you want to meet Auntie Minty,
yes,
go on to YouTube and see Ian's book launch. She's in her, she's 90.
91. Could be 92 now.
92. Sorry, 90, and yeah. Such a sprightly, incredible woman.
Oh, she's been a big help.
Yeah. How influential was she?
Well, you know, I wrote this book for the family. I went through the war period and the period of leave, and the book had to be rounded off with those last chapters about coming back to New Zealand. And Minty was absolutely instrumental. She encouraged me. She's been really a part of the story. She was the only person that knew some of the stuff I wrote. Incredible. Yeah. Yeah. And it's stuff that you want to bury sometimes.
Yeah. But we owe her a huge thanks.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you, Auntie Minty.
Right. Now, the song you've chosen today is a very emotive Dropkick Murphys version of Green Fields of France.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little about?
I chose that song because it conveys the same emotion about the war as my story does. And this is not really, this is a book about the war, but it's much more than just a war story. There's a lot of feelings around it, which are, you know, not just about somebody charging into battle. There's very little of that, actually. And this song sums it up.
Right, you might need to grab your tissues, but we're now going to listen to Green Fields of France.
Oh, how do you do, young Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside and rest for a while in the warm summer sun? I've been walking all day and I'm nearly done. And I see by your gravestone you were only 19 when you joined the great fallen in 1916. Well, I hope you died quick and I hope you died clean. Oh, Willie McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they play the pipe lowly? Did they sound the death march as they lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? And did you leave a wife or a sweetheart behind? In some loyal heart is your memory enshrined. And though you died back in 1916, to that loyal heart you're forever 19. Or are you a stranger without even a name? Forever enshrined behind some old glass pane. In an old photograph torn, tattered and stained, and faded to yellow in a brown leather frame. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they play the pipe lowly? Did they sound the death march as they lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? The sun's shining down on these green fields of France. The warm wind blows gently and the red poppies dance. The trenches have vanished long under the plow. No gas, no barbed wire, no guns firing now. But here in this graveyard that's still no man's land, the countless white crosses in mute witness stand to man's blind indifference to his fellow man. And a whole generation were butchered and damned. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they play the fife lowly? Did they sound the death march as they lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? And I can't help but wonder, no Willie McBride, do all those who lie here know why they died? Did you really believe them when they told you the cause? Did you really believe that this war would end wars? Well, the suffering, the sorrow, the glory, the shame, the killing and dying, it was all done in vain. Oh, Willie McBride, it all happened again and again and again and again and again. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they play the fife lowly? Did they sound the death march as they lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest?
Right, thank you so much, Ian, for talking with us today, and congratulations on such an incredible book. Into the Unknown, The Secret Diary of Kiwi Alec Trafford, number 25-469, is published by Penguin Random House New Zealand and is available at all bookshops. Ian will be speaking about his book at the Souter Art Gallery on Sunday the 25th of October at 3:30 p.m. So if you want to hear more, go along to that. I'm Galen Pound, and you've been listening to Top Writers. A podcast of this program and upcoming events can be found on www.topwriters.co.nz.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast available by funding the Access Media Project. Other great podcasts from Fresh FM are available through the accessmedia.nz app, or our website freshfm.net.